On the next episode of What's Going On with Earl Ingram, we're joined by Deacon Brown in the community, doing a huge outreach program for children, giving back to the community. We talk about his life. We talk about racism in Milwaukee. We talk about all the things that come and bring us together in the name of faith and in the name of Jesus. Join Earl on this journey as he speaks with a remarkable person who's also a clergy member, who's also a layman, and they're having a huge conference coming up very soon. If you want to know more about where to find Earl Ingram or where you can find more on the podcast, please like and subscribe to civicmedia.us or wherever you follow your podcast. And please stay tuned for What's Going On with Earl Ingram.
For you have never failed me.
Honor and respect that I get a chance to interview a man that I've known for quite a number of years and have grown very fond of. And as I was a young man trying to find my way, I got to meet this gentleman, and I've admired him ever since. I want to introduce you to Deacon Brown. And Deacon Brown is with
Greater Spring Hill and the National Baptist Convention USA Incorporated.
And
locally, we are the General Baptist State Convention.
And you are what they call a layman.
I am the president of the General Baptist Laymen.
So
14 churches represented in that group.
So what is a layman?
A layman is not clergy, but just members of the church. Mostly deacons is what we are right now, and that's what we concentrate on. Mentoring and witnessing.
But you are also one of the elders, a nonprofit that I founded 4 years ago, and I get a chance to fellowship with you and sup with you quite often. It just so happens that you worked with my mother many years ago, and we've got a connection and a tie that will bond us until, you know, we make our journey.
Your mother and I were quite tight. We had a lot of opportunities at Washington High School to fellowship together and to work with our youth. My wife met her, and they instantly fell in love. And when we met your dad and all of the rest of the family, it was on and cracking.
Well, you know, Deacon, let's talk a little bit about how you got involved in this, what you're doing now. I was talking with the pastor about the commitment that you guys make to the community to serve, doing this, what you're going to be doing today. Nobody said you have to do it. Why do you do it?
The love of God and for what he's done for me and where he's brought me from. I'm a baby from Mississippi, raised partly in Detroit at a time when blacks were coming out of the South trying to find jobs in the Motor City. And of course, I lived in an area near downtown that they call Black Bottom.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. It was a wide open field, much like what we're standing here in front of. And they would get off the trains, and some of them didn't have tickets, so they had to jump on the train the best way they could. But they would come and pitch tents or cardboard boxes across the street from where we lived. And it gave me an opportunity to share what little we had, because I would take something over some evenings if we had leftovers to give to one or two of the people out there and sit and listen to some of their stories and how they came to be. And it just gave me certain energy that I don't know. It's just a seed that was planted in me to serve others. And that's early on in my life. This is 7, 8 years old. But I got myself in trouble, because Mom, you know, was there with Dad, and they had their dispute with each other, and they ended up separating, and he left us there. And I never did get to see my other brothers and sisters that were still down in Mississippi, because when they brought me up, I was 3 months old. So I didn't really know them, but I knew about them.
Right.
I got myself in trouble there in the city of Detroit, and I say trouble, I mean trouble, because the police gave my mom an ultimatum. Miss Brown, if we catch him one more time, he's going to reform school. Out in the night, running around trying to play, because Mom was sickly, all the time sickly. My younger brother always nosebleeds and that kind of thing, so it put me in a caring position. Had to take care of them, had to cook for them, do a lot of cleaning for them. And I didn't get the play time like I should have gotten. So whenever I could, I stole away. And when in that stealing away, it put me out there with some of those that didn't have the kind of nurturing that my mom was trying to give me.
You know, Deacon, that story that you told, it's all too common a story back in those 50s
and even today.
And today, young kids today and young people. People ask the question, why are they so wayward? Why do they do the things that they do? Kind of the same kind of thing in reality that you dealt with.
Actually, it is the same. I mean, we have a lot of fathers that are not there. Like I said, my dad was away, he was gone, and I didn't know where he was going to or what he was doing. I didn't know if he had any kind of a job. I didn't know anything about the man. When I did finally get a chance to see him, he was stretched out in his casket. And somebody, I don't know who it was, one of my relatives tried to put me over in the casket to kiss the man. And I was screaming to beyond measure because I was scared to death. And one of my other uncles, great uncles, grabbed the man, whoever it was, that had me in there and told, don't you do that boy like that. Don't do it to him no more. And he took me out. But that's the only opportunity I got a chance to see my dad physically. That I can remember.
You know, Deacon, you're telling a story about the importance of a man in a boy's life. I think we're living in a time and in a society that sometimes people don't really understand. Those who have been blessed, I was blessed. I had a father in my life until I was 67 years old.
That's rich.
I didn't know what it was like not to have one. I had a mother and a father that were married for 66 years. I had stability in my life. One of the reasons why I kind of do the work that I do is because I want everybody to have, and young people to have, the kind of background that I had. It was stable, right?
Let me flip the script on that now. Because my dad wasn't there, and I got myself in trouble with that ultimatum. My mom I don't know how she did it, a letter or whatever it was that she sent to Mississippi, where my grandfather had the other brothers and sisters, and asked him if I could come. And she put a freight tag on me, much like a package, gave me a shoebox with some greasy fried chicken, and put me on a Greyhound bus, which took 2.5 days to go from Detroit to Mississippi because of all of the stops It had to make in between. I didn't have anybody else on that bus that I knew. I cried so hard, Earl, that I didn't wake up for the whole trip. When I awakened, I was at the location where I was supposed to go. Everybody was off of the bus. I was still on the bus. And I opened my eyes and looked out the window. One of my sisters says, he's got to be on there. Had she not said that, and had I not awakened at that point, I don't know where I would have ended up, because I had no clue where I was going. But that was a new chapter in my life. It opened up the door for wherever God wanted me to be, because I was there now with my grandfather, who was my dad's father. He was a man. When I say a man, he was a man among men. Even then, whites and blacks alike gave him utmost of respect. And he didn't play with any of us on that farm that we grew up around, picking cotton and chopping and doing all of the things that we had to do to survive.
But you know, Deacon, you didn't have to do the kinds of things that you're doing now. Are you saying that the reason that you're doing service and all those kinds of things is because you found yourself at a young age?
God pointed me in that
through.
Direction, Earl. It was him doing that, not me. I had no choice in the matter. So I grew up there with my granddaddy and all of the rest of the sisters and brothers. He used the N-word a lot. You niggas get up out that bed right. And go to school, get on that bus. He urged every last one of us, there were 8 of us, to get on the bus. And we all got on the bus. We went to school. When we got home in the evening off of that bus, we went to the fields or wherever it was. If I had to chop wood to make the fires for the morning or whatever the case might be, I'd learn that work ethic.
You overcame so much because you went on, got a college degree, became an educator. Tell us about that journey.
That was a wonderful journey. Like I was saying, my sisters and brothers, they had to go to school as well. Mississippi Valley State University, which was Mississippi Valley State at that time, was about 30 miles maybe from us, and they would catch the bus and go there. And they had to come home and get off that bus and go to work every day. And I said to myself, self, we're not doing that. So I told my granddaddy and my sisters and brothers that I had a scholarship to Jackson State. I was playing in Jackson State College's band because I was in the band in high school. And that band trip gave me just what I needed, the inspiration to go back to the city, the bright lights, the big city. Of course, that was a journey in itself because it put me down there at Jackson State during the time of the riots. And I went through all of that. When the girls' dormitory was sabotaged by the, what do you call them, the militia or whoever they were at the time, come marching down the street with a tank and the dogs, and they put that tank right in front of the middle of their girls' dormitory, and some idiot down there, as they always are, had a 22 and shot out there in the air, or whatever he did, but it catapulted them to shoot up that girls' dormitory. I was out there in the field with the rest of them protesting because there was a street running down the middle of Jackson State named Lynch Street. It had no red lights, no stop signs. So a lot of the whites who came out of the suburbs or wherever they came from had to traverse through there. And a lot of times they would hit one of our students or whatever the case might be and kept running. And there was never anything done about it. So we protested. That's how one of those riots began. And of course, you get the factions from the outside of the college that came in, and things got out of hand.
So, Deacon, you're talking about the 60s.
I'm talking about the 60s.
And so the reason that this is so important is because many people think about slavery and the journey, and that happened so long ago, but the 60s weren't so long ago, and people not realizing that people are still facing a lot of racism and bigotry and those things that still go on in our society. We've come quite a ways, but we still got a long way to go on that front.
When I arrived in Mississippi, it was the same year, 1954, that Emmett Till was castrated, hung, and put into that Yazoo River. My granddaddy took me to town, Greenwood, Mississippi, to get a haircut. And after my haircut, I was walking along the sidewalk. And I started whistling, and he slapped me so hard, it was almost like he took my head off. You don't whistle down here. You don't whistle down here. That's what he told me. And I, to this day, I don't whistle in Mississippi. But he did that because that young man got castrated and hung because he was down there whistling, down there on vacation from, where was it, Chicago? Yeah, you know? Those are the kinds of things that were catapulting all of us to run away from Mississippi to move north. Those are the things that people were running away from, not the fact that they didn't have much. You know, we wanted things. We wanted to do things. I mean, it's a human nature, you know. Everybody wants the same things, basically. You know, so I don't care if you're white, black, or what color you are, you want the same basic needs and wants that everybody else does. So you do what you have to do to get them. And a lot of times, we don't have the opportunities to do that. But it catapulted me to want to do for my people, to turn things around. That's why I do the things that I do today. I want to help our youth because I was one of them.
Yeah, Deacon, we got to wrap this up, man. But I feel your spirit. I love being around you. You know, every time I'm around you, you take me back. I mean, I'm thinking of my mother. Your relationship with my mother, and the fact that you are, I'm a mirror, you're a mirror of who I am. Serve. Never get tired of serving. If people really realize that the real key to happiness is to serve others, and not to make all the money in the world and to buy all the things. You and I found it, right? And if I see you, I see a mirror image of myself. People don't know how to be happy in this world. They think all the things that they can buy and all the things that they have and all the money will give them happiness. And I know a lot of people with a lot of money and a lot of things that aren't happy. But if they only knew the key to it, make a difference in somebody else's life, right?
That's the key. That is certainly the key. And that's why I do what I do. And much like I was saying a moment ago, even when I was at Washington High School, all of those students that came to my classes, I treated them like they were mine. I was trying to be the dad that some of them didn't have, and I tried to boost and encourage those that did have a dad. I went to home and visited the homes, which is what teachers should be doing today. But we don't have many of us as we did then, because they sent a bus down to Jackson, Mississippi to induct some of the new teachers that were coming out of the college down there. That's how many of us came to Milwaukee. And man, it was just an awesome time for us. And it changed the dynamics of this city big time. Because most of those students that I see now that came from under us are prosperous and doing well.
Well, Deacon, it's a pleasure. Always good to have an opportunity to interact with you.
Yes, sir.
And I'm watching these young people gathering over there and getting ready to have a great time. God bless you, the layman.
All right. Thank you.
And all those who serve.
All right. God bless you. Thank you, Carter.